Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 7, Further Inquiries by Vidura, text number 16. Sadvitavya Hritam Vidhan. Nadma Mayanam. Nadma Mayanam Hare. Abhyatya Paratam Nimulam. Vishvamulam Nayadbahi. As good as it should be. Etat. All these explanations. Vyahritam. Thus spoken. Vidvan. A learned one. Na. Not. Atma. The self. Maya. Energy. Ayanam. Movement. Hare. Of the personality of Godhead. Abhati. Appears. Apartam. Without meaning. Nirmulam. Without basis. Vishvamulam. The origin is the supreme. Na. Not. Yat. Which. Bahi. Outside. Translation. O learned sage, your explanations are very good, as they should be. Disturbances to the conditioned soul have no other basis than the movement of the external energy of the Lord. We'll read that responsibly. O learned sage, your explanations are very good. As they should be. Disturbances to the conditioned soul have no other basis than the movement of the external energy of the Lord. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. A living entity's unlawful desire to become one with the Lord in every respect is the root cause of the entire material manifestation. For otherwise, the Lord has no need to create such a manifestation even for his pastimes. The conditioned soul, under the spell of the external energy of the Lord, falsely suffers many unfortunate incidents in material life. The Lord is a predominator of the external energy, Maya, whereas the living entity is predominated by the same Maya under the material condition. The false attempt of the living entity to occupy the predominating post of the Lord is the cause of his material bondage, and the conditioned soul's attempt to become one with the Lord is the last snare of Maya. Sadvitadvya haritam vidvan natma mayanam mayayanam hari abhyadvyat pata niyamulam vishvamulam nayadvahi. A learned sage, your explanations are very good, as they should be. Disturbances to the conditioned soul have no other basis than the movement of the external energy of the Lord. So this purport by Srila Prabhupada expands on the purport he gave in the previous verse. So he is again highlighting this factor that God is the predominator and all other living entities are predominated. It is this lost science or lost understanding which needs to be revived by devotional service, and then one can one's mind can be fixed on the path, progressive path back to the spiritual world. So this is the knowledge which is being given by Maitreya Muni. So this is the vision of the sadhus, because sadhu, the word here is used sadhu. The sadhu, they cut away what's that? Our attachments, illusion, misunderstandings, they cut it. They're not like politicians who, you know, flatter people for votes or like that. You know, Maitreya is not, Maitreya Muni is not trying to flatter Madhura to get some popularity. You know, maybe Madhura will, I'll flatter him, he'll go and, you know, meet so many people and tell them what a wonderful bloke I am. It is cutting straight into the heart of things. So, you know, this is the vision of the devotee, and of course, because this is the vision of God, the devotee, they have God, and the devotee have the same vision. Prabhupada ends his purport saying that, he begins it saying that, actually, the Lord has no need to create such a manifestation even for his pastimes. So, you know, from the point of view of Krishna, the whole material manifestation really has no, you know, he has no purpose to fulfill in creating it. If it wasn't there, it wouldn't bother him at all. The whole material manifestation just wasn't there. It's, you know, he wouldn't be lacking, you know, thinking, well, I've just got, you know, Radharani and, you know, Vaikuntha and all these unlimited spiritual powers, you know. It's, but, so from his perspective, and Prabhupada says here, even for his pastimes, you know, which is, again, it cuts away at a lot of misconceptions. A lot of philosophies just get cut down by that one statement. Because, you know, generally there are three types of philosophers. There are those who believe that there is nothing more than material world existence. Right? So, for those who believe there is nothing more than material existence, you know, their philosophy is eat, drink, be merry, you know, while we live. Enjoy, predominate over the material energy while you have the opportunity. Tomorrow you'll be dead. You know, be the predominator. That's their philosophy. You know. Be the predominator. Take advantage of it. You get a fleeting moment. While you've got the opportunity, tomorrow you're dead. Enjoy, predominate over the material energy like that. That's a materialist philosophy. Then some who think, well, you know, that's it's still a lot of effort for very little enjoyment. That's what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, from the highest planet down to the lowest planet, all the places of misery where repeated birth and death take place. So within that you know, slaughterhouse of birth and death, old age and disease, you try and sneak in a little bit of happiness, right? So, you know, in between all the things that can kill you in this world, you try and sneak in a little bit of happiness. And in between, if the things don't kill you, they just make you really sick, in between that, if you can get a little bit of happiness in there. But you've got to do it before you get old, because you can't enjoy much then. And you sort of got to do it outside of school hours. It doesn't leave a lot. And you've got to do it outside of work hours, and you've got to do it when you're not sleeping. So somewhere in between all of that, get a little bit of happiness like that. So some of them think, gee, that's a lot of, you know, really dodging the bullet to get a little bit of happiness, very risky. And in the end, it's all finished anyway, you know. Life's very hard and then you die. So then they may think, so what is the use? And they may feel, so, you know, it's better that we just cease to exist. Like the Buddhist philosophy. Better we just stop this whole existence altogether. That we can either be the predominator for a short time, otherwise there's nothing. But because being a predominator is fraught with so many problems, better we just don't bother. You know, we want to be the predominator, but because it's a lot of trouble for nothing, we won't. So in either case, their philosophy is based around whether they can or cannot be the predominator. Isn't it? Sour grapes. It's like the, you know, the box jumping up trying to get the grapes, and then they can't get it, so the grapes are sour anyway. But whether he's eating the grapes or can't get them, it's based around the fact is, can I enjoy those grapes? Whether he abandons the grapes or jumps to get them, it's the same mentality, I'm the enjoyer of those grapes. See? So the Buddhist philosophy, whether they abandon it because of it's so difficult and fleeting, or whether they, in the materials they're trying, it's the same thing, I am the predominant. So then the third class, not third class lower, not that they're higher either, but the third type, they may feel that, yes, material existence, you know, fleeting moment, very little happiness, you know, illusory. So let us take to spiritual life. After material existence finishes, there is spiritual life. let me become God. Again, I become the predominator. So, you know, at no stage, you know, the concept, the philosophy based around, oh, I'd love to be the predominator. It doesn't, you know, that doesn't appear in any of that. So that's the last snare of Maya. In other words, they're still under the same grip of illusion of being the predominator, right up to the point of spiritual life, whether voidist or impersonalism, or sahaja. Even the sahaja, if they have some personal concept of God, let me be Krishna, I will enjoy with the gopis, I will have so many girlfriends, they can be Radharani and the gopis, and like this. So that concept, you know, where really one's original true identity as a particle, a spiritual particle of the Lord's energy meant for his pleasure, that concept is not there at any stage, that we're the eternal servitor. We're a part of the whole, just like the, you know, the finger is a part of the hand. It is meant for the, you know, service of the entire body, not for its own individual. It is not the individual predominator over all the affairs of the body. It is just a little part of the body meant to serve the body, like that. That concept doesn't come in any of those philosophies. So in every stage, actually, Maya is there, right up to, you know, taking the spiritual path. So, this concept is very, very difficult to shake off. Therefore, in the previous verse, Prabhupada says that the science of Krishna, or the science of God and the living entities, is so subtle that even a personality like the Durva has to consult persons like the sage Maitreya. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, because the material energy is Krishna's own energy, meant to, you know, capture, punish, and reform the living entities who are not surrendered, or who want to rebel against their natural position. That is the very purpose of the material energy. And that material energy is controlled by Krishna. So therefore, unless one surrenders to Krishna, ultimately that same material snare will entrap the living entity. So one can, you know, take to materialism as a predominator, Buddhism as a disenchanted predominator, or spiritual life as a spiritual, you know, predominator, still under the same influence. Either way, because that concept of that I'll do anything but serve the Supreme Lord, because that's there, then Krishna will not let them become released. And even if there is some, you know, they may sometimes achieve liberation in the impersonal existence, they will fall, you know, down from that, unless one finds shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. So in all circumstances, it's not possible, it's Krishna's material energy, material illusion, which prevents the living entity from understanding. If the living entity wants that illusion, that's if the spirit soul wants to remain always forgetful of that position that I'm the eternal servant of the Lord, then that energy of the Lord to keep them in that illusion, to allow them to forget, is in operation. So if we want to forget that position, then by Krishna's energy, by his Maya, then we can always remain forgetful of that position that I am the eternal servant of the Lord, either through, you know, one philosophy or the other. So it's a very, very, you know, subtle but powerful effect of Krishna's energy, material energy. And therefore we see that even those who are trying to understand how to get out of the clutches of the material energy and onto the spiritual platform, you know, quite often they come to the point where they believe that, you know, I am God, or I'm practicing this yoga process to become God. I've now forgotten I am God, but by practicing this process, which is given by, you know, the Swami with the big tummy and the orange robes and the twinkle in his eyes and the big beard, you know, Swamiji has given me some, you know, process, I will remember I'm God, and then again I will enjoy. And for those who believe that, yes, I have been following, you know, Swamiji, you know, Bogananda, you know, for so many years, And I have come to that platform. they actually think, yes, whatever I am doing in this world, this is my lila. Ultimately, because I'm God, you know, just now I'm not remembering, but somewhere before I took birth, I chose to come here and get kicked and beaten and, you know, slaughtered in so many different ways. I chose that. That's part of my lila. I am God. And, you know, I have chosen to enjoy all varieties of enjoyment in the material world. So, that very statement goes again, you know, here Prabhupada says that, you know, ultimately God has no real other purpose for the material energy. You know, he's quite, you, just like, you know, in the state, in the country, you know, if the government said, oh, you know, all the citizens have become honest, you know, we're really attached to these prisons, maybe we'll just throw a few of the honest people in there, you know, just keep them going under all circumstances. You know, if all of the citizens become honest, they're like, thank God for that. You know, it's like, you know, so much work, so much money, you know, to keep the citizens, you know, doing harm to each other or, you know, what have you, you know. So much difficulty. If they're all honest, close the prisons, you know. Let's celebrate. What is the use? You know, they're not going to keep them open. All the citizens, there's no dishonest people in the land. Close them up. They have no value. They're not going to spend billions of dollars. They're not going to give good men. They're not going to waste their time. It'd be a waste of time. It has no value. The material existence is like that. For those who... here Prabhupada says in this purport, he says... in the previous purport. This one. A living entity's unlawful desire to become one with the Lord in every respect is the root cause of the entire material manifestation. It's unlawful. As soon as we, you know, thinking, oh, you know, if I could just get rid of Krishna, you know, me and the gopis, and, you know, I could have a lot of fun up here in the spiritual world if it wasn't for Krishna. You know, I think I'd like to be, you know. It's unlawful. You know, for that mood to remove Krishna from existence so that we can enjoy without interruption is unlawful. And for that, the material world is created, for that unlawful desire. You know, it's very horrible. You know, it's sort of like the... with the you know, the non-devotees who you know, they take the milk from the cow and then they, you know, which is therefore like a mother, and then they'll slaughter the mother, you know, slaughter the cow and eat, you know. It's a very horrible thought, you know, when devotees see the cows, they see, you know, mother cow, and, you know, the thought of even a little disturbance, you know, to the cows is very unpalatable to the devotees, even a little disturbance. We know that Krishna loves the cows in the spiritual world. Every day, you know, he sees the cows. And when he appeared in this world, Nanda Babu had 900,000 cows. Krishna used to milk them and take them out, and then when they came back in the evening, he would call, he knew each one by name. 900,000 cows. He knew each one by name, and he would call them, and he could call them on his flute. So by playing his flute, he would call their name. And as they would come, he'd, you know, put the little bead down. When they'd all come through, then, you know, they would all go home. So much, you know, love and care. Actually, those cows in the spiritual world, they're all great sadhus, you know. They're nitya siddhas in the spiritual world. They're all, you know, eternally liberated souls. But, you know, or, you know, we see our parents, or, you know, we see our child. You know, sometimes it happens like that in this world. You know, there was someone on the Mornington Peninsula a few years ago. Ordinary person, decided marriage was just not his cup of tea, and killed his wife and children while they were sleeping with a spear gun. It was too much trouble for him, too much difficulty. But that, even the thought enters someone's head, here's my wife and children, you know, I'm doing so much work, you know, geez, if I could just make them disappear. Even that thought shouldn't be there. It's unlawful. That mentality in the heart, I'd do it if I could get away with it. You know, that shouldn't be there, you know. So for that unlawful desire, the material world is there. Otherwise it has no other purpose. And but, you know, from the common man to the great philosophers and the so-called spiritualists, they're attached to this material world as the all in all. Even those claiming that I've, you know, achieved the, you know, position of becoming God, they're still attached to the, I'm here, this is Leela. But actually, from Krishna's perspective, there's really nothing there. From a devotee's perspective, there's nothing there. You know, there's the Prabhupada used to tell the story of the Himalayas. The Himalayas, everyone heard that there was a big rumble coming from the Himalayas that they're going to give birth. So the Himalayas, huge mountains, you know, massive, you know, just takes your breath away just looking at them, rumbling like that. And then a little cave, sort of crack at the bottom, starts to appear. Everyone's waiting, what's going to come out? The Himalayas are giving birth. And from out of the bottom of the Himalayas comes this little mouse. Squeak, 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 squeak. Like that. Big letdown, you know. Material world is like that. Huge, massive. You know, the science, you know, if you try and look at it, it just goes on almost forever. But really, it's a lot of hullabaloo at nothing. Nothing really. It's just, you can't quite, nothing there. So, and, you know, the other interesting thing is that everyone who comes here is a rascal. From Brahma, Prabhupada says this, from Lord Brahma to the little ant, they're all rascals. You know, we glorify, oh, great demigod, or, you know, this and that. Because, you know, our Brahma is a devotee, so, you know, we won't criticize. He's a devotee. But sometimes, as Bhaktivinoda the Kaur says, I would rather take birth as an insect in the house of a devotee than in the house of a Brahma. Because sometimes Brahmas are not properly devoted, not full, you know, so they can be a lot more materialistic than, although, you know, there's obviously a lot of piety there. So, but to those, you know, it's, I read it once that, you know, when the spirit soul first comes, falls, you know, when they first become a rascal and they fall to the material world, their first birth is as a Brahma. They're still a rascal. So, You know, in this world, you see, you know, people get they get education, they get qualification, they get degrees, they get certificates, they get adulations and titles, so many things. You know, this one's a prime minister, you know, prime minister of Australia. Someone's a prime minister of America. You know, someone's the prime minister of Russia. You know, ride around on their big horses and Cadillacs. You know, someone's a doctor, you know, or a lawyer, or you know, something like that, and very, very proud of that. You know, many put a lot of effort. You know, is it how many years? You know, up to the age of 30, some of them in you know education to you know to get that certificate, stick that on the wall. People come into their office. People, you know. I walked up to one of those certificates once. I had a look. There was a little fine print said, you know, so many years of education, so many qualifications. This person is a big, big rascal. Sign Krishna. No, wasn't it? But from Krishna's perspective, it's the same thing. And here it's described that it was described in the previous verse. In the purport, Prabhupada says, by clearly understanding from authorities like the sage Maitreya, one can become situated in real knowledge and the disturbed mind can thus be fixed on the progressive path. If one hears from a devotee, because the devotee, they're getting their opinion from Krishna. Krishna created the material world. He knows better than anyone else its value. It has value to take you back to Godhead, but apart from that, it doesn't. And he would be, it's not something, you know, it's not like a holiday place for Krishna. You know. But to hear that message from the devotee is very difficult, you know. Imagine we're preaching, we go out in the street, got a handful of books. Sir, you are a big rascal. Everything you're doing in this life is useless, useless waste of time. And you know, you might be better to listen to what I'm, you know, I will say to you, you know, like that. If you go up to anyone, no one's going. But actually, that's the message that we just read it in this purport. You know, that's actually the message of the Bhagavatam. I think it says that in the you know in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, from the topmost planet to the lowest planet, all places of misery, repeated birth and death take place. And the Bhagavatam, you know, describes Sutta Goswami that, you know, unless one's engaged in, you know, activities to promote love of God, it's a useless waste of time. He says straight off in the very beginning. You know, just at the very beginning, not at the end, but at the beginning. That's actually the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But if you go and speak that to someone, they're not going, that not only will they, do they not want to hear it, they're going to become angry. For even saying such a thing about the material world, that from their perspective, with their, whatever philosophy they got going on in their head, is the place where they are in one shape or form or another, the predominator, and this is what they're attached to. As the all in all. Prabhupada gives this example that in prison, you know, quite often when people go to prison, they have the. They still do it in some places in the world, but they give them the really hard, bad jobs that you know no one can do, like breaking rocks. You know, they, you know, quite in the old days, you know, it's just like, you know, they take him into the deserts, you know, like that, or some barren place, you know, in the heat, no, probably no waters, no shelters, nothing. And from morning to night, while chained, while being beaten, whipped, underfed, insulted, kicked, they will break rocks. You imagine if I said, after Bashar, after class, we're all going to go in the courtyard, we're all going to go break some rocks. Hey, come on, gang. Now, if someone was silly enough to follow me, any hands up? Can I see? Show a hand? No? Good. If someone, is that a hand? No? You're scratching your eyebrow. Okay. I'll excuse you this time. But if someone was silly enough to do that, how long will we last? 5 minutes? I've got someone breaking rocks. 5 minutes is like, okay, I've had enough. Now, these prisoners are doing this for 10, 20 years, day in, day out. Right? So, Prabhupada says, one prisoner who's intelligent, he's realized that there's a free life out of the prison system, and that he is preparing to leave the prison system and go to the good life of freedom. At that, so he is preparing. So he still has duties to do, but he wants to prepare his mind, and he wants to, make that, get out of the prison as soon as possible. If he could do it within the next second, let me do that burning desire. I will get out of this prison, as soon as I can. If I get out in 2 minutes, I'll be gone. Burning desire. So he's thinking like that. So he starts talking to the other prisoners. I've been thinking, about when I get out of prison and trying to reform. And the prisoners start to get angry. Talk. We've got this work to do. We've got our quota. Because, they're so conditioned that, of course, in their mind, they know that if they break a certain amount of rocks, they won't be beaten as much. They might get an extra dollop of, gruel. What? Gruel. Gruel. This would be that cartoon, The Wizard of Oz. There's a cartoon, The Wizard of Oz. He was sort of like in old times, and he was in prison, all chained up, very skinny old man. And they used to, his daily meal was a dollop of gruel. So, the prisoners, they're like, if we break out, we might get an extra dollop, maybe even a dollop and a half of gruel, in our next meal. Each and every meal is like some gruel and some water. And the guards won't beat us as much. So they're taking this, that, this is by your speaking to us like this, you're disturbing our happiness. Like that. So when a devotee speaks to someone about getting out of material existence, they're taking it like that. You're disturbing my happiness. I'm so busy being happy and doing, working hard, breaking rocks. As Prabhupada actually compared, that literally whatever we're doing in this world is like just breaking rocks. It's just it's a very hard grind, just a few moments of pleasure. And quite often that pleasure is really, as Prabhupada points out, it's not so much happiness, it's not so much bliss or transcendental, but there's a little relief from distress, from the extreme distress. So, they have this punishment mentions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Described. This is Lord Chaitanya's description of happiness in the material world, you get a prisoner or someone, and you dunk them in the water, and you know they're gasping for breath. They're just about on their last breath, and then you pull their head up, just you know when they think that I'm a goner, you know, and I'm so happy. That breath, that's a, you know, that's happiness in the material world. That gasp, the suffering is abated. My father used to tell a joke about that, but I won't tell it. But so you know that happiness is it's not complete happiness. It's not like the happiness. It's not like the happiness of one whose heart is, you know, just filled with love. They have no aspirations for anything. They don't want anything. They don't need anything. Their heart is just filled with all sorts of mellows of love. Like Lord Jesus said, he said, "My cup runneth over with love." Like that. That, you know, there's happiness. Even materially, what to speak of spiritually, even materially, you know, it's a well-known fact in this world that you can have gained all sorts of material facility, fame, wealth, beauty, property, so many things. If you don't have love in your life, there's no happiness. There's no happiness. And someone who may have nothing, have just got the bare essentials, and their heart is filled with love, they're completely satisfied. They don't need anything else. What to speak of spiritual love, which is the eternal thing. The problem with material love is somewhat limited, and you know it's temporary. Every, you know, all your the people you develop attachment and love for, you know, get chopped down by the material energy, and so do we. So you know it's very distracting, to say the least. So material happiness is like that. You know, it's not like that happiness where the heart is filled with bliss. There's some relief every now and then from, you know, great pressures building up externally or from within the heart. It's like Krishna says in the Gita. It says, you know, this enemy that's hounding you, Arjuna, or the living entity, us, is living in, you know, when you're hounded by an enemy, always on your back, they're always making you fearful, they're always, you know, causing you so much trouble. This enemy is within your heart. It is lust burning up like that. There's no, and you know, sometimes that enemy with lust and greed and anger, there's a little relief from that. Oh, that is happiness. So, from a devotee's perspective, but if a devotee tries to speak that, and people become, you know, very, very angry, and they don't want to hear. Because from there, they're, you know, they're so determined to be the enjoyer that no matter what happens, you see someone, you know, just someone's in hospital, you know, they got their leg in traction, you know, broken arm, you know, they sort of got run over by a bus, you know. How's it going? Oh, great. Yeah, couldn't be better. Grouse. Yeah, sweet, mate, sweet. Yeah, no, I'm fine. You know. Because, you know, even in the, you know, in the worst situations, they will never, ever give up that concept that I'm actually the enjoyer. That thought, they will never give it up. Actually, even for devotees, sometimes devotees may think, you know, I'm trying to make spiritual progress, but the material energy is just, she just got me in her grip, she's hanging on to me, I just can't get out of her grip like that. So actually, one devotee said that to the guru, and the guru became somewhat angry at that false, you know, analysis, and he said, you come and see me tomorrow morning, I think it was. And when the disciple came, the guru was clinging onto this tree and crying out, "Let me go! Come on, tree, let me go!" And the disciple walked up and said, "Guruji, you're hanging onto that tree." And then, you know, so the guru explained, yes, we think that Maya is hanging on to us, but actually we are clinging on, you know, to Maya, to the material energy. So, but you can't actually, you know, go up to someone and just say, sir, I'd just like to tell you you're a big rascal, a great offender to God, and, you know, even though you call yourself a religious person or an honest person or, you know, wonderful family man, what have you, you're nonetheless just a big rascal. And practically everything you're doing in this material world is useless waste of time. You're not using it to develop your love for God. So what we sometimes do is we say, we do invite them. You know, you come to the temple, and you break rocks for Krishna. You know, because people are still attached to, you know, doing certain things. So you come and do that for Krishna. So, and then it gives the devotee an opportunity. They're still somewhat doing the same thing. They're still breaking the same rocks, but they're getting prasadam. You know, they're making some friendships where, you know, where people seem to, you know, do have their welfare at heart. It's peaceful. It's a mode of goodness. Very nice. So, you know, they're happy to sort of do that in the association. And it gives the devotees an opportunity to speak to them. And then they begin to hear. And then by hearing from the devotees, gradually they understand that, oh, my real business is not, you know, breaking rocks in the material world under the pretense of being a lawyer or a judge or a politician or a family man or this or that or the other. Actually, I would like to go back to the spiritual world and have nothing to do with material existence. The cycle of birth and death, I would just like to get out of that whole cycle. And I would like to, again, you know, feel that pure love just filling my heart, overflowing in my heart, just pure love without even the slightest trace of selfishness. I would like to experience that happiness again, which is only possible on the spiritual platform. So that is the process of devotional service, which begins by hearing that one hears from the devotees and hears about Krishna, because by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, as we're doing now, by hearing that, we hear about Krishna, we hear about his devotees, we hear about those loving relationships. It's like a window into the spiritual world. And when we see the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see the beautiful minds, the beautiful hearts, the beautiful life of Krishna and his devotees. We think, you know, there's this beautiful world, and then there's what I'm doing. You know, and we sort of, you know, we compare, okay, there's all of this wonderful thing in the Bhagavatam, and then there's this, my life. So, that, and of course, one takes up the chanting, because if one hears, and then one would like to offer a prayer to Krishna. Dear Lord, I'm now in the clutches of the material energy. Please place me under the protection of your spiritual energy. Hare. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Hare Hare. Please, Lord, let me place me under the protection of your spiritual energy. Ultimately, under the guidance of, you know, Srimati Radharani. And so we begin to chant, and that chanting takes away, you know, so much karma, and, you know, one is imperceptibly liberated. Of course, if one wants to develop prema, or pure love of God, that chanting has to be done under the guidance of a spiritual master. Because, you know, that relationship with the spiritual masters, you know, one makes a vow. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. Now, basically, when you cut those things out, there's nothing left in the material world. You know, right? You know, Prabhupada's very clever. Look, there's just four little things that'll get you to give up. Four little things. Right? There's so many things in the material world, you're just going to give up four. But if you look at it, after you've given up this four, it's like you look at the material world, there's just nothing left but an empty shell. So, but if one is not inclined to make that vow to the spiritual master, it means one is clinging on to enjoy the material energy. So that is a very significant point. It's not that, you know, those vows are taken, you know, within the heart. One has to fight, you know, conditioning and you know, desires that may still, you know, appear. But that disciple has made the choice, a momentous decision, that yes, I will begin that process properly, fully. So even though they're not 100% surrendered, they're putting 100% effort into, even from the very beginning, at that. Then the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra like that, that can actually lead one progressively to, you know, prema bhakti. Otherwise, you know, one can get some benefits from the holy name, but one will not get prema bhakti unless one comes to that point of commitment. That is the blessings of the process. So, yeah. So these are, so Vidura, of course, he's glorifying, you know, Maitreya, beautiful, you know, thank you so much for these wonderful instructions. Says that, you know, that the disturbances to the conditioned soul have no other basis than the movement of the external energy of the Lord. You know, it's just a disturbance. The whole material creation is caused a disturbance. It's not like that. Otherwise, it has very little value. But we can take from the material energy if we take the opportunity to take shelter of a spiritual master, learn the process of pure love of God. You can't just love God. You know, if someone thinks, "Yeah, I love God," as soon as I saw Krishna, oh, just the love, it was so much love coming. You know, that nonsense. You know. It's like, love is, you get to know someone. You know, you don't just say, yes, I'd love to love someone, I'm going to get married, you know, put a blindfold on, spin me around three times, whoever I'm pointing at, I'm going to marry that person. You know, you marry someone because, you know, you learn about their specific qualities. Usually before marriage is always good. But you learn about their specific qualities, their nature, their characteristics, and, you know, then you feel, yes, love, you know, I'm attracted to that person. Otherwise, you can't, the love is not there. Similarly with Krishna, you know, when we see his form, generally people think of God as an old man. You know, someone, they want to be religious, and when they, every time they think of God, they think of this hunchback, old grey-haired man up in the clouds somewhere, you know, giving instructions, putting ticks and crosses and books, you know, and floating around on the cloud. There's no hotels, there's no TAB, you know, no newspapers, it's like no television, oh God, you know. But if they see a picture of Krishna, they think, oh, you know, there's a eternally youthful. I still remember, you know, the very first time I saw Krishna in a picture. I still remember that distinctly. And I've told that story, I won't tell it again. But when I saw a picture of Krishna, it's with a doe, I think. I thought it was a calf, but when you look carefully, I think it's actually a doe. Krishna's sitting on a rock and there's a doe. Right? It's like a deer. And he's playing his flute and, you know, sort of dark background. I think there's a waterfall like that. And I looked at that picture, I thought, who is that enchanting person? And I was trying, it's so beautiful. Like, is it a boy? Is it a girl? It's like, you know, it's so beautiful. Long hair, because I was a hippie, so that, you know. And, but, you know, the peacock, he's got a peacock feather in his hair. How original, you know, who does that? But how nice, you know. And playing a flute, and the animals love him. You know, you see a person, and you know, the animals, you know, you know, the animals just attracted to that person. Think, what is so special? You know, animals love that person. You know, they just, birds come and sit on their shoulder. You know, you see someone, they sometimes do that. Sometimes I used to work in the garden, and well, I still do, but you know, putting in flowers, because we use a lot of flowers for our deity worship at home. And there's a lot of organising, you know, a very rough patch of land and gradually, you know, conquering it and turning it into something that can produce nice flowers. And just day in, day out, just, you know, very carefully, you know, doing things and just on my hands and knees, you know, the little birds used to come up and they'd sit right next to me. And even the mice, they just come, and the mice and the birds, and they just come because they felt that they knew I wasn't going to hurt them. You know, they just felt like, he's one of the guys, you know. You're okay. But the mice just come up and they just sit there and they'd watch me and I'd be doing things. I'd be thinking if I move, they're going to run. They just watch for like ages. Little birds would just sit there and they sing to each other. But, you know, it's attractive. Here's Krishna. He's sitting on this rock. The animals love him. He's got this beautiful form. He's got this blissful look on his face. Hasn't got a care in the world. He just looks like he's really, you know, just so peaceful and loving and, you know, interesting and enchanting. And, you know, I saw that picture and I'm thinking, who is that person? Like, you know, you sort of, you want to know. You want to know. And so, and of course, the more you know about Krishna, the more you realize, you know, just in the beginning, I saw just, you know, I almost saw like just a fraction of dust from his lotus feet, and it was enough to attract me. The more you know about Krishna, the more attracted you become. So that process of hearing about Krishna from the devotees, when one decides, okay, yes, in the beginning I'm thinking devotees, there's such a disturbance, I'm trying to work hard, I haven't got time to stop and get a book, I haven't got time to listen to them, I'm so busy, you know, being the enjoyer of this material world, in the midst of all my soul, I haven't got time for these devotees. And somehow or another, they stop that and they think, oh, I'll listen. Not for long, I'm busy. I'll do you a favour, Mr. Devotee. I'll listen to you because, you look like a nice bloke. I'll sort of, you know, I'm only doing it for you. I don't really care. Somehow or another, they get to that point. I'll listen to a devotee. And then when they start to hear about Krishna, as their heart begins to, yes, oh, this is, this. I would rather have that love for God in my heart than this lust, which is killing me. It's burning up my existence. It's destroying my life. It's given me so many bad qualities. It's just destroying my relationship with everyone I know, including myself. I want to kill myself. You know, I would rather have that love for God. So then they hear about these pastimes. And then it actually, as Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, that when you hear these pastimes of Krishna with his associates, it actually removes that lust. You know, if you hear properly from a devotee, it will actually, it removes that lust within the heart. Like that. So Dura is making all these inquiries from Maitreya, so that Maitreya will give him so much wonderful knowledge and Krishna Gita for the benefit of even us to this very day. So I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or pastimes. Is there any difference in hearing the pastimes, the aim, form, qualities, pastimes of Lord Chaitanya or Krishna? No. From one perspective, that because Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, they have the same effect. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared within Kali Yuga, so sometimes it's a little easier to relate to, because Krishna's era was quite different, especially when Krishna was here, to when Lord Chaitanya appeared. So actually to hear the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, something a little bit more closer and relevant for us. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is much more merciful, which is also, there's a, sometimes it's a little daunting, when reading Krishna's pastimes, because, if someone is sinful, they might get the Sudarshan Chakra, cut their head off. Lord Nityananda, he called Raghunath, "Raghunath, you're a thief. You must be punished." What was his punishment? He had to feed all the Vaishnavas, the Panihati, and he had to get Lord Nityananda's, the dust of his lotus feet on his head, that was his punishment. So, what the speaker here in the pastimes of Prabhupada, Prabhupada is even more merciful, and it's more contemporary. So, quite often, personally, I've found that one of the easiest ways to introduce and attract someone to the movement is to give them the Prabhupada Lilamrita, just, even the condensed. Read about Prabhupada, and when they read that, it's like their heart melts. It is such an attractive, and it's a book that's just, for people who are spiritual seekers, they're reading about a guru and they're reading about it, it sort of demystifies, a lot of the nonsense and what have you, and it presents the philosophy just in a very nice way in the form of his biography. And what he did was just simply, no one will ever have an achievement like what Prabhupada did. So, but Prabhupada was very, very merciful, because with Krishna, of course, very, very strict Vedic processes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, much more liberal, but for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, still very strict in many ways. For instance, women would pay obeisances to him as a sannyasi from a significant distance. In the time of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who's even more merciful, he allowed the men and the women to be closer, even to the sannyasis, to some degree. But actually, even in the times of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the women came to the temples, they made garlands, they cooked, they didn't take Brahman initiation, and they didn't worship the deities. In Prabhupada's, and Prabhupada understood that the world has changed, and of course now he's preaching all over the world, he was even more merciful than Bhaktisiddhanta, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Krishna. They just serve equally. Not that there was ever an inequality, but for social customs. See, for in some societies, like in a Vedic society, if women and men mix too easily, men are like butter, Prabhupada says, women are like fire. You got a problem. Right? So, It's better they don't mix. So it's not that they're higher or lesser, you know. But in order to... But Prabhupada was so potent and gave such a wonderful process for us to follow. And he also allowed the women to preach, which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the core. So actually, Prabhupada gave such a wonderful life that they've always been equal. But now, because he gave them such a higher taste in Krishna consciousness, they could sort of mix freely without being as fearful as they what they may have done in previous times. So it's not a question of that they're higher or lower, but for social conventions, it wasn't done, even in spiritual circumstances. Prabhupada gave such a wonderful process. You know, prasadam, dancing, chanting, beautiful temples, beautiful deities. We have Mayapur, we have Vrindavan. You know, look at the deities, how they're so beautifully dressed. You don't find that, you know, in other missions, you know, the way that Prabhupada got his, you know, it's so enchanting. You know, you come in, you take darshan of the deities, they take darshan of us. And when you go out into the material world, you are just, you've got Radha and Balabha, Gaur-Nitai, Jagannath Balaram Subhadra, they're just fixed in your heart. And it just, you know, it's so powerful to just, you know, keep the attraction, the material energy away. So, you know, there we get the same benefit, spiritual benefit, by hearing Prabhupada, by hearing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by hearing Krishna. But there's varieties, and especially with Srila Prabhupada, you know, his leelas, particularly enchanting. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, you know, his pastimes are very, very liberal, very, very merciful. But the difference is that it's very hard to understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes in one sense, because he's giving more information, you know, speaking it, explaining it, you know, the spiritual platform that Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan were on, going to great lengths to explain that elevated spiritual understanding. It's like the post-grad, what do they call that? There's graduate, there's postgraduate, there's a PhD, you know. It's a very elevated philosophy. So, you know, from many angles of vision, just the wonderful pastimes and, you know, gathering up, you know, letting everyone, you know, before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, people didn't go out in congregation and chant on the streets. You know, when you chanted, you know, you chanted by yourself. Maybe, you know, with your family, maybe with a couple of sadhus. Or if there were a lot of, it wasn't, they didn't get out on the street. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's all right, sadhus, gather up all the sadhus, get drums and madungas, we're going out on the street. You know, that's, whoa. So, you know, that's, here's, you know, so when people see the sadhus, they're not just, you walk and pass on your way to the market and there's a sadhu chanting by the banyan tree. You're on your way to the market, there's 50 sadhus with drums and cymbals and, you know, dancing madly and throwing gulab jamuns at everyone. You know, that's very attractive. So, you know, even if we don't understand the philosophy, but, you know, because it's so attractive, it actually helps us. Or what was he talking about then? You know, let me try and understand, you know, what's behind all this. And Prabhupada also. Prabhupada's pastimes, you know... Let's do that. We're not in India. We're in New York. Yeah, Russia, Africa, like that. And we got devotees come from all over the world dancing and hugging each other and chanting. You know, in this world, you've got, you know, this group hates those ones and they want to kill that one and this one wants to kill that one and they all hate it. They can't even get on a train to go to work together. And you get devotees from all over the world, they're hugging each other, they're touching each other's feet, they're putting food in their mouths, they're giving each other gifts. Like that. Very, very attractive. So, you know, in one sense, you get the same benefit, but in another sense, there's such variety. And in another sense, the teachings may be more or less, you know, difficult or easy to understand. I think Rajneesh's brain is dead. But, you know, I was hearing this past time that when Prabhupada, the deities, they were in New York, there were some deities which I think are now in Gita Nagari. Anyone here been in Gita Nagari? They took those deities when Vishnu Jan, you know, they had four big, you know, devotees, and they just carry the deities right into the heart of New York. They're fully clothed and everything. They just did an aarti for them, you know, and did kirtan right in the middle of the streets of New York. You know, it's like there was things that happened in Prabhupada's day. You imagine that, we just grab Radha Bala, you know, grab their paraphernalia, whip down into the, you know, middle of Berg Street, we do a full aarti, doing, you know. There's some, you know, Krishna said, I'm going with you guys. You guys are going out. I'm coming with you. You think the rest of the world is going to be attracted? I'm attracted. I'm coming. Don't leave me in this temple. So, you know, this is the pastimes of Krishna. Anyway, I'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.